You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby.
The darling this season in war spending is the hypersonic missile. They are being designed so that artificial intelligence, or AI, will eventually do most of the thinking to pull the trigger. Diplomacy is not part of the algorithm. It is not programmed in. No one ever factored into the equation what we have now, that one day algorithms would be making the decisions. Algorithms couldn't give a damn about mutual assured destruction or whether the planet is blown up to smithereens. This isn't an arms race, it's a suicide race.
That's Kuhan Pakmander, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Kuhan Pakmander on arms race equals suicide race. The Oppenheimer movie and the Ukraine war have brought much-needed attention to the possibility of terminal war. The arms race will end the human race. To call nukes weapons of mass destruction comes nowhere near describing the level of devastation that their use would result in. To be clear, these are weapons of annihilation that would make Hiroshima and Nagasaki look trivial. And how are our great leaders addressing this existential threat? Instead of advocating universal nuclear disarmament, countries, led by the United States, are spending billions to upgrade them. That's a good definition of insanity. It's nothing short of a miracle that nuclear war, the ending of the planet, has not happened. Can our luck last forever? The odds and logic say no. If we don't reverse the insane arms race, we will be committing suicide. Our guest today is Kuhan Pakmander. She's a journalist, filmmaker, author, and peace and environmental activist. She serves on the boards of World Beyond War and the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Her articles appear in The Nation, The Progressive, Foreign Policy in Focus, and other publications. She spoke at the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice on June 25th, 2023. And now, Kuhan Pakmander.
In the name of the environment, the Biden administration has disingenuously committed the U.S. military to all electric vehicles and transitioning to biofuels for all its trucks, aircraft, and ships. Are we supposed to feel better now that World War III will be green? So what does not figure into their climate calculus is that Biden's plan will not stop the Pentagon from decimating populations of whales and dolphins, or killing coral reefs and coastal ecosystems to build bases. And our planet's oxygen supply is inextricably linked to the health of marine ecosystems. You see, when coral reefs, coastal ecosystems, and rainforests are killed, it sets off a cascade of systems failures. Corals, plankton, algae, trees and the soil biome that would otherwise be capturing carbon and producing oxygen are destroyed. But as far as the Pentagon is concerned, the ecocide will go on. So what if the vehicles are electric and the ships run on biofuels? As long as the military's mission is to dominate earth, sky, sea, and the heavens, biofuels and electric vehicles will not stop the Pentagon from crushing the planet's inherent abilities to regenerate itself in the face of climate catastrophe. To make matters worse, the military is undergoing a little-known paradigm shift in the way war is waged. It requires, among other things, a series of so-called smart grids to be installed that will enclose the entire planet with 5G and sonar. Earthbound mission control centers are moving into space, into the cloud. The military base, housing thousands of troops and armed with tanks and machine guns, like what we saw in Afghanistan, it's now passé, which may explain why the U.S. withdrew from that old-school war so hastily and without finesse. The military base is being replaced by what has been called a high-speed kill web. It uses information as the primary weapon of war. It will enable empire to summon at once unmanned military forces to rain terror down on any spot in the world. A swarm of drones, hypersonic missiles, submarine torpedoes and bombers, and all with the ease of calling an Uber. This is why demonizing China has been so essential. Only a foe as formidable and distant as China would justify the hyper-costly infrastructure overhaul required. War with China, and now with Russia, requires the U.S. to pour far more resources into military fantasies than what would be required by the usual bombing of a small third-world country. The high-tech profits will make the money made by Halliburton during 20 years in Afghanistan look like peanuts. Pacific archipelagos have been designated by war planners as either first island chain, second island chain, or third island chain in geographic relation to China. These island chains run from the far north to the far south of the equator. If the Pacific were a football field, think of these as lines of scrimmage. These island chains have been described as a wall, a barrier to be breached by an attacker or strengthened by a defender. They are seen as springboards, potential bases for operations to attack or invade others in the region. So in a territorial sense, they are benchmarks marking the extent of a nation's influence. The first island chain is closest to China. It starts at Jeju Island, the jewel of Korea, 300 miles from Beijing. Jeju has been a center of controversy for a decade and a half because of a Navy base that was built in a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The base was completed in 2015, and its ships are equipped with Aegis missiles pointed at China. Rare and endangered corals were dredged to build the base despite years of ferocious protests. These waters were once home of the famous Henyo, the free diving ladies, who have recently reported that the corals, abalone, and once biodiverse ecosystem are dying due to base operations. Following the archipelago southward are the Japanese-controlled Nansei Islands, also called the Ryukyu Islands. With the exception of Okinawa, these islands were until very recently extremely untouched. They were remote fishing islands, and now they're home to 5 missile deployment and surveillance facilities, all calibrated to challenge China. The most notorious island in the Nansei archipelago is Okinawa, where residents have been protesting U.S. military presence since 1970. The most recent outrage has been the use of soil mixed with the bones of both Okinawan ancestors and fallen U.S. soldiers as landfill for new base construction at Henoko. And on nearby Ishigaki, local citizens have been furiously protesting the dismantling of Article 9 in Japan's constitution, which outlaws war. Dismantling Article 9 will decriminalize the deployment of weapons of mass destruction on these islands. On the exquisite island of Yonaguni, only 99 miles from Taiwan, the island's endemic wild ponies, the Yonaguni ponies, lost their watering hole when a radar tracking station was built. Yonaguni residents are outraged. Further south, in the Philippines, the U.S. signed a deal a few months ago to lease 4 bases there. This is the first U.S. basing in the Philippines since 1992, when the Philippines Congress evicted the U.S. military after a century of colonial presence and its concomitant injustices onto the second island chain. The second island chain is found to the east, roughly halfway to Hawaii. It is comprised of Guam and the rest of the Mariana Archipelago, plus other Micronesian islands. 1 million square miles of waters surrounding the Marianas have become the ultimate playground of doom, where biodiverse ecosystems are subjected to endless torrents of bombs, bullets, shells, sonar, underwater torpedoes, landmines, missiles, and more. The area is larger than the entire nation of India. This in the most cetacean-diverse spot in the Pacific. Since 1997, the tiny uninhabited island of Farallon de Medinitsa in the Marianas has been used for bombing practice. It has been a favorite traditional fishing spot and is still a migratory bird stopover, albeit a very deadly one. The Navy drops 6,000 bombs per year on this island. To accommodate the troops that will be rotated through Guam, an original growth limestone forest in Guam was raised to build a base. 500 hectares were bulldozed, including the archaeological site of an entire village. The remains of 3,000 bodies were dug up and put in cardboard boxes to be stored in various offices around the island. The most beautiful, pristine part of the island has been usurped for live fire war training and to build this base. Rather than move on to the third island chain or Hawaii, I'm going to jump to describing the infrastructure for unmanned space-based warfare. 21st century infrastructure will essentially be a multi-dimensional grid in space and in the sea, as well as a grid of thousands of satellites in the heavens. It also includes an ambitious grid of island mini-bases that are comprised of missile deployment facilities, satellite launch pads, radar tracking stations, aircraft carrier ports, live fire ranges on land and at sea, and other facilities. And on the surface of the ocean, it is a grid of 5G devices. Underwater, it is a grid of sonar and radar devices, still in the research and development phase. Here is a drone loaded with sonobuoys, or sonar devices, that will be dropped into the ocean. They will transmit whale-killing sonar signals to 5G sensors on the ocean surface. The 5G sensors will then relay the signal to receivers located either in satellites or on land or on ships. Just to give you an idea of how lethal sonar is to whales, when low-frequency sonar, low-frequency active sonar is activated in Hawaii, it has made the sperm whales all the way in Australia stop eating for 2 days. This is how fatally disruptive sonar is to whales and dolphins. It is equally detrimental for mating, birthing, hunting, and voyaging. Saturating the ocean with sonar will kill our oceans. Nevertheless, the Marine Holocaust Plan is being called the Smart Ocean. The idea is to enclose the entire planet with 5G sonar and lasers in order to create a comprehensive electromagnetic cocoon in which to track and operate missiles and unmanned robot vehicles anywhere in the air, in space, on the ground or underwater, anywhere, anywhere, anywhere on the globe. Not an inch will be spared as the planet is transformed into a gigantic three-dimensional chessboard. It is part of a master plan called the Joint All-Domain Command and Control, or JADC2. At the heart of the JADC2 is a data storage cloud called the JWCC, or Joint Warfighter Cloud Capability. On December 7th, 2022, the Pentagon awarded a $9 billion contract to Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Oracle, comforting household names. The inaugural exercises to help develop this new gridded warfare were completed in the summer of 2021 in Hawaii. The new technology linked Navy and Marine Corps sea, air, land, space, and cyber weapons spanning 17 time zones. Troops practiced blowing lots of things up in Hawaii's marine habitats, by clicking on their laptops at Pearl Harbor. So, the satellite smart ocean infrastructure will greatly accelerate the ease with which the U.S. and its allies will be able to conduct war games. It will enable military exercises to take place in synchronicity over vast expanses of the planet. Currently, naval exercises are the cause of tens of thousands of whale and dolphin deaths per year. Pentagon documents have projected the number of injuries and deaths caused by war practice around the Mariana Islands alone to be around 150,000 for the 12-year period between 2015 and 2027. They state that the projected number of injuries of deaths of whales and dolphins in the Gulf of Alaska would be over 182,000 over 5 years. Because there are hundreds of naval exercises throughout the Indo-Pacific every year, we can easily extrapolate that the number of fatally injured whales and dolphins would be around 100,000 per year. As we transition to space-based warfare, which will accelerate and proliferate all aspects of war making, we can expect those cetacean fatalities to rise. Here are reefs of the Western Pacific, a part of the world that is dense with the most biodiverse reefs on the planet. It's home to the Coral Triangle. Corals are being killed by all these war games, which are not games at all to life in the sea. The detonations are real and continual. The marine massacres are real and continual. Here's a snapshot of the brinkmanship taking place last April in the Western Pacific. As congested as these death armadas appear, they will be dwarfed by the number of ships and expanded scope and frequencies of military exercises in the near future. When speaking about joint war exercises with other countries, military officials often use the term interoperability. Interoperability means the ability for militaries from different countries to work together on the same communication system and with the same culture, procedures, commands, and compatible equipment. This is like many countries all at once playing the same video game, and it's designed by one country, the US. But the only difference is it's not a video game. The detonations are real. The explosions are real. In order to achieve interoperability, armies from various countries conduct war exercises with each other. Each year, new weapons are rolled out by the manufacturers as if they were Gucci fashion or Apple iPhones. So each year, the armies have to practice on that season's new weapons to master them. It's an endless cycle of war practice, even during peacetime. Further, interoperability is actually a very nice way of saying colonized, because the objectives, the culture, the language, the algorithms are all determined by the U.S. When a country buys arms from the U.S., these weapons are calibrated to be compatible with the larger system and agenda determined by the U.S. It's like buying an Apple versus a PC. The consumer is tied to a certain standard of compatibility. According to the 2019 Indo-Pacific Strategy Report, the quote, tool of first resort in strengthening alliances and attracting new partners, end quote, is foreign military sales, weapons sales. In line with this philosophy, weapons exports have increased dramatically in recent years with the prospect of war with China on the horizon. The oceans, I'm going to talk about the oceans now and why whales are so important to the oceans. The oceans sequester an astonishing 2 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. That is nearly double the 1.2 billion metric tons of carbon that was emitted by the U.S. military between 2001 and 2017. 16 years worth of carbon emitted by the U.S. military, the entire military, is only about just less than half of all of the carbon sequestered by the oceans in 1 year. This comparison puts into perspective how essential ocean health is to the survival of all life on Earth. Much of this carbon sequestration is due to the presence of whales. Whales are the foundation of ecological resilience of the ocean. As such, They are the fundamental species to mitigate or delay climate catastrophe due to their symbiotic relationship with phytoplankton. Marine biologist Asha DeVos has provided us with much research on how whales do this. You see, as whales dive to the depths to feed and come up to the surface to breathe, they actually release enormous fecal plumes, which is nutrients for all sea life. This is called whale pump by scientists, and it brings essential nutrients from the depths to the surface waters and throughout all the oceans because of the great distances that the whales swim. They stimulate the growth of phytoplankton that forms the base of all marine food chains. Because of phytoplankton photosynthesis, the oceans generate more oxygen than all the rainforests of the world combined. This is compounded by the fact that due to climate change, forests have begun emitting more carbon than they're capturing. In fact, 10 UNESCO World Heritage Site forests are releasing more carbon than they are absorbing. This alarming development places ever more importance on our oceans to function as the lungs of the planet. The delusionary need for perpetual year-round military practice in our oceans is one of the most ecocidal developments of modern culture. We essentially have non-stop war now taking place in our oceans, even with no war officially being waged. But war is being waged, that is, a war on all the living spirits that populate the undersea community and enable our oceans to support life on Earth, the whales, dolphins, turtles, crabs, seahorses, jellyfish, algae and seaweeds, eels, plankton, manta rays, and coral. The U.S. is rapidly organizing its vision of the global economy around weapon sales and militarism and war games. It seems to think that it can do this while simultaneously addressing the climate crisis. This is not possible. You cannot do both. A weaponized Pacific is a dead Pacific, and a dead Pacific is a dead planet. Save the whales, save the planet. There has never, ever been a more urgent time to throw down swords and cooperate with one another. So that is the first part of my talk tonight. And the next part, I'm going to talk about how we frame the world we live in, that it needs to be framed in a different way, because what we're doing, it's not working. So I've been thinking a lot about different ways of communicating our world so that maybe we can all come together and cooperate. According to the doomsday clock, the time now is 90 seconds to midnight, the closest humanity has ever been to the end of the world. The experts at the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists who set the doomsday clock do so by looking at a number of trends. They look at nuclear stockpiling, carbon emissions, and the rate that the sea levels are rising. The scientists also assess factors like the current push to produce plutonium pits, the push to develop more AI-driven missiles and other unmanned weapons, and the war raging around the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. They consider how air travel has increased by 52% over last year at this time, and that it is predicted we will easily cross the 1.5 degree climate threshold in a brief decade or less. They watch as Biden passes laws to allow more drilling for oil. They consider how the planet is losing its capacity to regenerate itself in the face of climate catastrophe because our oceans are being killed by ever-increasing overfishing, deep-sea mining, plastic pollution, coral bleaching, and the military activities like war games, like the installation of the underwater military infrastructure. Taken all together, this multidimensional convergence of a litany of kamikaze behaviors is upping the odds of Armageddon so exponentially that it makes the doomsday clock seem quaint, even obsolete. Things have never looked so dire. Modern civilization is hurtling toward cataclysm on every front all at once. And yet, We seem to be stuck in this intractable holding pattern. Our elected officials keep making the wrong decisions. The media keep reporting in ways that polarize. Education is bankrupt. It's all happening with such impeccable synchronicity that it seems like it's part of some grand diabolical scheme to kill us all. But is it? Who would be responsible? Would it be the military-industrial complex, or would it be the Mickey Mat, the military-industrial congressional intelligence media academic think tank complex? Or is it just capitalism itself? Who or what is behind it? This is where Moloch comes in. Moloch is an ancient entity first cited in Leviticus. Allen Ginsberg reinterpreted Moloch in his epic poem, Howl.
This is Allen Ginsberg reading the Moloch section from his poem, Howl.
What sphinx of cement and aluminum bashed open their skulls and ate up their brains and imagination? Moloch, solitude, filth, ugliness, ash cans and unobtainable dollars, children screaming under stairways, boys sobbing in armies, old men weeping in the park. Moloch, Moloch, nightmare of Moloch, Moloch the loveless, mental Moloch, Moloch the heavy judger of men, Moloch the incomprehensible prison, Moloch, the crossbone soulless jailhouse and congress of sorrows. Moloch, whose buildings are judgment. Moloch, the vast stone of war. Moloch, the stunned government. Moloch, whose mind is pure machinery. Moloch, whose blood is running money. Moloch, whose fingers are 10 armies. Moloch, whose breast is a cannibal dynamo. Moloch, whose ear is a smoking tomb. Moloch, whose eyes are 1,000 blind windows. Moloch, whose skyscrapers stand in the long streets like endless Jehovah's. Moloch, whose factories dream and croak in the fog. Moloch, whose smokestacks and antennae crown the cities. Moloch, whose love is endless oil and stone. Moloch, whose soul is electricity and banks. Moloch, whose poverty is the specter of genius. Moloch, whose fate is a cloud of sexless hydrogen. Moloch, whose name is the mind. Moloch, in whom I sit lonely. Moloch, in whom I dream angels. Crazy in Moloch, lack love and manless in Moloch. Moloch, who entered my soul early. Moloch, in whom I am a consciousness without a body. Moloch, who frightens me out of my natural ecstasy. Moloch, whom I abandon. Wake up in Moloch. Light streams out of the sky. Moloch, Moloch, robot apartments, invisible suburbs, skeleton treasuries, blind capitals, demonic industries, spectral nations, invincible madhouse, monstrous bombs. They broke their backs lifting Moloch to heaven. Pavements, trees, radios, tons, lifting the city to heavens which exists and is everywhere about us. Visions, omens, hallucinations, miracles, ecstasies, gone down the American River. Dreams, adorations, religions, the whole boatload of sensitive breakthroughs over the river, flips and crucifixions gone down the flood, highs, epiphanies, despairs, 10 years animal screams and suicides, minds, new loves, mad generation, down on the rocks of time, real holy laughter in the river. They saw it all, the wild eyes, the holy yells, they bade farewell. They jumped off the roof to solitude, waving, carrying flowers, down to the river, into the street.
That was Allen Ginsberg reading part two of Howl in Chicago on January 29th, 1959.